Good morning, and welcome to a special edition of Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay. I'm a recovered compulsive reader from Chicago, Illinois, and I will be the host for our presentation today. Today is Sunday, June 21st, 2026. The share ID numbers for Friday, June 19th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 23,562. That's 23562. And for the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, 23,563. That's 23563. This morning, A Vision for You presents A Design for Daily Living. You know, for many of us, when we get here, we arrive to the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, all we could ever see was what the food was doing for us rather than what it was doing to us. And, but what, you know, what a hopeful message we got that, you know, that when it came to our alcoholic foods, a higher power could enter into us and expel that mental obsession. And that was a very hopeful message. And I wasn't sure if it would work, but it was hopeful nonetheless. And so this is the great, you know, restoration project here that I do not do myself, but somehow paradoxically I'm most definitely a participant, right? And we learn that surrender to God is not a passive process. Rather, it's a daily active living thing. Really, it's born of action. All action is born first in thought, and we learn that lack of power, that was our dilemma. That was the problem. You know, food wasn't my dilemma. It wasn't my spouse. I had two of those. It wasn't my parents, nor was it my children. In fact, all the disturbances that plagued me were merely manifestations of a deeper disease, really a spiritual disconnection from my creator. I was aware of a creator. I even believed in a creator. I just wasn't plugged in. The power wasn't flowing through me. And the big book reminds us that, you know, we had to find a power, of course, by which we could live. It had to be a power greater than ourselves, greater than human power. But where and how are we to find this power? And the big book offers clear-cut directions on how the co-founders and early pioneers of AA recovered from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And they had a blueprint for recovery from alcoholism. And that was pretty cool. And we owe a debt of gratitude to the people that, you know, carry this message to us and give us these clear-cut directions out of the book. And you know, I've heard it said that if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. You know, if there's no map, if there's no compass, well, take any road you want. You know, you can walk in circles if you want, Larry. I mean, you're never going to arrive at a destination. But when we try to carry this message, the one thing that can't be mired in confusion, you know, the one thing that can't be buried under all the myths and that steer people towards what the program isn't rather than what the program is. I'll tell you what that one thing is. That one thing is that we can't confuse is how to get well, and how to recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And there shouldn't be any confusion about that. And see, you know, we owe anyone who is dying a slow death in this disease the truth, and not my opinion framed as fact, rather the truth is laid out in the text. And, you know, Bill Wilson, he called it spiritual kindergarten. Another fellow, one of the people that started A Vision for You among the ladies that did, said something that really resonated with me. She said, you know, it's like one big show and tell operation. You know, it's all in the demonstration of who we are as human beings. When we show them what God did for us, there's not a lot of telling necessary. They see it in the showing, right? And demonstration is far superior to words. So joining us this morning to share her journey in this program with an emphasis on steps 10, 11, and 12 is Lindsay W. from Texas. And Lindsay is a very dedicated member of Overeaters Anonymous. I know that she's committed to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a way of life. She probably does it like I do, imperfectly. But it's with great appreciation that we invite Lindsay to the line this morning. Good morning, Lindsay.
Hi, good morning, Larry, and thank you for that. My name is Lindsay W., and I am a compulsive overeater, and I live here in Texas. And the thing I'm probably the most grateful for in that introduction is the reminder to me and to everyone on the line that I do this really imperfectly. And that's the truth. And I'm so excited and so grateful to be here this morning. And I'm really nervous. I'm really, really nervous this morning. And I'll start with qualifying, and I'll make that quicker. But I always say, like, I'm a really gutter level compulsive overeater. Like, I'm like a heroin addict with the food. Like, I have this thing in a really, really bad way. And the disease of compulsive overeating manifests itself physically for me as extreme morbid obesity. So at my heaviest weight in the disease, I was 350 pounds. And I'm 5'3", so that's a lot of weight on a small person. And I didn't even want to be alive. I hated myself, my existence. I was just slowly disconnecting from you, from the world, from myself. I certainly had no connection with a higher power. I was really desperate and dying and hopeless in this disease. And I remember listening to this phone meeting, and I remember listening to these special editions and not being able to get out of the food and believing that you all didn't understand the depths to which I had this thing, because if you did, like, you wouldn't be able to get abstinent, right? Like, I really believed, like, this wouldn't work for me. And so, my sponsor and I chatted yesterday, and she reminded me, that if nothing else, I hope that my message this morning lands on the ears of the person who thinks that this can't work for them. The person who just doesn't believe they can get out of the food, the person who's in the depths of hell of relapse. And I hope you know from hearing my story today that there is hope in these rooms, And, I've got 5 years and a little over 2 months of abstinence, of food sobriety. And I am maintaining a healthy body weight, over 200 pound weight loss for over 3 years. And, there are so many times of, like, how did this happen? And people want to know, what did I do this time? What was different this time? How did I stick to it, quote unquote? And, like, the truth is, I don't have an answer for that. And I wish I did. I wish I had a formula for what I did this time, how I put down the food, how I've kept it down for over 5 years. And I think, I think that in this program, what I've learned is that I can find a way to be okay with saying I don't know. But what I do know is that there's something that has happened to me. Every single day that I am not killing myself with food, it is because a power greater than me has separated me from my alcoholic foods, from my alcoholic food behaviors, from overeating. And I really believe that you know, but for the grace of God, there would be thousands more demonstrations. Like, I didn't earn this. This is an unmerited favor of a power greater than me. So it's some sort of combination of a higher power separating me from it and the actions that I take. You know, there's a very clear set of instructions in the book about how we stay sober with the food and the way that we are to live our lives on a daily basis. And it's very clear, you know, we don't have to guess at it. And so, you know, I've in the last 5 years and a couple of months, you know, I've walked through a lot of life, because the truth is, in recovery, it's not, you know, we don't recover so that we get a life that is problem free. You know, I recover so that I can walk through life, problems and all, and I don't have to use food. And I can stay connected with a higher power, and I get to feel all the feelings, which doesn't, you know, they don't always feel pleasant. But if I can just go to bed tonight, and when my head hits the pillow, if I am sober, that's a win. You know, and then I have a chance to show up tomorrow and do better. And so I say, you know, one of the things that I have done consistently in the last 5 years, especially in times of grief and loss and sadness and stress and uncertainty, is I've sponsored. I have continued to work with others consistently without fail. I have always had sponsees that are in the work that I'm taking through the book. And so when I thought about, you know, what do I want to share on this morning? Like, what did my higher power inspire me to share on? And it was, you know, it was about working with others. And it's funny, my sponsor and I both sort of had the same inspiration about talking about working with others. And then, you know, I was reading in the book and I thought, I want to back up even a bit more and really talk about, what is that design for daily living? What does that actually look like? And so I'm gonna definitely spend time this morning talking about sponsorship. I also just want to talk about steps 10 and 11 and just what that looks like for me. So, you know, it's funny because I usually spend a lot of time in my shares talking about what it was like. I'm very comfortable talking about that. You know, I can talk all day about the pain and the misery, and I think it's important. I think it's so important for newcomers to hear what it was like, and that I really understand life in the pits of hell of this disease, right? That I couldn't buckle the seatbelt on the airplane, that I would, you know, go to the bathroom on myself in my car because I would eat so much fast food, I couldn't make it home in time. You know, that I was spending all of my money and then some on food delivery and incurring insufficient funds fees with the hundreds of dollars I would order 3 times a day at minimum. And, my rent check, you know, I was always short on my rent check, but somehow it would clear because, you know, I'd get the deposit from my job. And then eventually that ran out and I was getting kicked out of my apartment. I was in my mid-30s. I was a successful professional and I had an eviction notice on my door. I could not pay my rent. And, you know, just like our friend Bill Wilson in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I called my parents. And I said, please help me. This time I mean business. I'm going to go back to OA. I'm going to do the deal. I'm going to get in recovery. And I meant it. I was serious. I wanted it so desperately. You know, it says in the Big Book, right, this is the baffling feature of this disease, the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. You know, and I was... Man, I've never wanted anything more in my 44 years of life than to stop eating compulsively. There's nothing I've ever wanted more. And I couldn't stop. You know, my car would turn into fast food restaurants. My steering wheel would turn against my will. Like, it's only in a group like this I can say something that sounds so insane, and I know you understand me. Like, I didn't want to do it and I couldn't stop. I was driven by the compulsion. Every single day, the end goal of the day was just to make sure I had enough food, because I was eating for oblivion. I didn't want to feel anything. I didn't want to feel anything. I blotted out the consciousness of my intolerable situation. The reality of my life was too difficult to bear. And the reality wasn't even that bad. By the way, fast forward, nothing has really changed. But what has changed, and what the solution here is, that because I worked all of the steps as outlined in the big book, well, I've had a spiritual awakening. I've had an entire psychic change, which means I've had a change in my thinking. The way that I react to life has completely, has altered entirely as a result of working the steps. And so, where I would like to go here is, let's start on page 84, the middle of page 84, where we read, "This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness." So the first sentence there, this thought brings us to step 10. What is this thought? Well, the opinions expressed here are my own, but this is how I've been inspired to share. This is what I've been inspired to share. So this thought is, let's back up. They will always materialize if we work for them. These promises, they will always materialize if we work for them. So what do we have to do? So it says we have to work for these things. So how do we work for these things? So what does that actually look like in action? Because for me, when I'm going through the work, and when I'm taking sponsees through the work, and when I am, you know, living this out, it's like, how am I practically applying these principles? Like, how am I actually practicing this way of life? This is not, you know, this is not a book. It's not like, oh, we're going to have big book trivia and whoever wins is going to get to stay recovered. Whoever knows the most about the big book is going to get recovery today. No, not for me. This is like practical situation. How am I actually using these principles every day? Like, I use my cell phone, like I use my toothbrush, right? Like, I use my vacuum cleaner, right? Like, the things I use in my everyday life, how am I actually using these principles? So gives us these directions. And again, it says the way of living. We commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So, you know, people say a lot, I'm living in 10, 11, and 12, you know, and what does that actually mean? What does that mean that I'm living in 10, 11, and 12? Well, so our first instruction here is, and by the way, I'm not going to go in depth through the instructions for steps 10 and 11, but I am going to touch on some of the things that, you know, that are important in my recovery, or that I feel like inspired to share on. So we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Remember, we started that in step 4 when we took our inventory. So we're going to continue doing that. And it says, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. So when these crop up, so I don't know about you, but for me, again, back to the imperfectly, every single day these things are cropping up for me. I've got resentment on my inventory every day, and not like deep, oh, I'm so angry resentment. I mean, sometimes, but little bothers, things that annoy me, people that annoy me, these things crop up, and it says we ask God at once to remove them. And my question for myself is my first stop God? Am I asking God at once to remove these things? And the truth is, look, sometimes I need people's help in getting to God. But God is the solution. Like, ultimately, God is the power that is going to remove my selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And but absolutely, it says, and then we discuss them with someone immediately. We make amends quickly. And then love and tolerance of others is our code. And something that's been coming up for me a lot lately, in conversations with others, with sponsees, in my own life, is that my code in this way of living is not right and wrong. It's not. It's not about determining for myself, for other people, and for the world what is right and what is wrong. My code is love and tolerance. And on page 19, it says, you know, real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and respect for their opinions are attitudes which make us more useful to others. Ouch, right? Because it's true, like, other people do have shortcomings. Other people do have viewpoints that I am not particularly aligned with, but it says real tolerance of those things makes us more useful. Real tolerance, right? Doesn't bother me as much. Things can just roll off. And then it says, my very life depends on my constant thought of others and how I may help meet their needs. And every time I read this, you know, with a sponsee, I'm like, I don't know if you dislike that as much as I do, but every time I read it, right, it's like, oh man, that's right. Like, this really is the end game here, you know, constantly thinking of others and how I can help meet their needs. So look, we get a lot of promises in 10, 11, and 12. We get a lot of promises, and it starts taking us through the promises here, right at the bottom of 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. I'm not going to read all the promises, but these are some absolutely incredible, beautiful promises. And let me tell you, they're true for me. I'm not fighting it anymore. You know, people truly don't believe me, but I'll serve dessert to people, and I don't want it. There's no willpower involved. Like, I truly have gotten these promises, this neutrality. I'm seldom interested. Like, how is that even possible for somebody that was 350 pounds and couldn't even get a half of a day? I kid you not, a half of a day of abstinence. But listen to what it says on page 85. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So I don't get to just like get these promises and ride off into the sunset. I have to keep in fit spiritual condition. And how do I do that? Right? I like to dig in, not just like, okay, great, I'm gonna keep in fit spiritual condition. Do to do, right? No, like, what do I do? And on page 14 and 15, I love this passage in the big book. It's one of my favorites. So in Bill's story, it says, you know, faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. So faith without works is dead. And here's how I perfect and enlarge my spiritual life: through work and self-sacrifice for others. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to go up to a mountain and, you know, do a 10-day meditation retreat. Now, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of room for that, but it tells us here, we do it through work and self-sacrifice for others. So, you know, what does that look like for me? Well, let's start in the rooms of OA. You know, how do I work and self-sacrifice for others in the rooms of OA? Like, what does my 10, 11, and 12 look like? Well, number one, sponsoring, as I said, you know, sponsoring is, and I'll go through some of the big book passages on it, but like, nothing so much ensures immunity. Also calling newcomers, right? Am I taking down the names and numbers of these newcomers and calling them, or am I waiting on them to call me? I got to tell you, I fall into that a lot. Well, you know, if they really want help, they're going to call me. But like the founders did not do that. They went in search of people to help. Am I doing the same thing? Am I reaching out to newcomers? Am I, and look, even if the people on this line, if you've got 1 or 2 days out of the food, you can be helpful to a newcomer. That is a way to work and self-sacrifice, right? Like you don't have to have 5 years of abstinence to work and self-sacrifice for others and to be helpful. Look, doing service at a meeting, right? Being a timer, reading the tradition of the month. I show up and I turn my camera on. I am present at meetings, in the in-person meetings, you know, putting out the chairs, whatever it is. And for me, you know, now it's sharing my story of recovery. And, you know, we learn to do things that we are incredibly afraid of in these rooms, right? I have learned that I'm going to be scared and I'm going to do it anyway. I have learned that I can be afraid and I can walk through the fear. You know, all men of faith have courage. And that's been my experience, right? Because even this morning, like I have fear. I have fear of what you're all going to think of me. I have fear of, you know, is what I have to share good enough, recovered enough, spiritual enough, smart enough? Like I show up anyway and I do it. This is how I self-sacrifice and I work to help others. You know, something has happened to me as a result of this incredibly loving God. And it's the least I can do to share it widely, you know, as widely as God opens doors for me. And I used to be really, really terrified to share. I mean, I would literally write down every word I was going to say, because I wanted to make sure I sounded really good and that I could control what you thought of me, you know? And slowly I've stopped doing that. And again, that's my story, but it's like, you know, what does God want to say through me? And that's where faith comes into play. You know, another thing is that I, and again, this is all kind of 10, 11, and 12 all combined here, but you know, I've led a couple of retreats. And then last year, May of last year, you know, I had a chance to lead a big book retreat solo up in Oregon. And I was really excited, but I was also really afraid, you know, and when I was on my way up to Oregon in the plane, we had to stop at Denver. So from Houston to Denver and then Denver to Oregon. And we were almost there. The plane was almost there. And then it turned completely around and went back to Denver due to some issue with the plane. And I just remember thinking like, I don't even want to go. I just want to go home. I don't want to do this. I'm so scared, you know? And I got there and I showed up that night and I told everybody that story, you know? And then the night before the retreat started, I just woke up in a full-blown panic. I was like, what am I doing here? How am I even qualified to do this? God, what am I even going to say? How am I going to take these people through the big book? And it was one of the most beautiful experiences of my life, because it was just like, here I am. Here's an opportunity to be of service. You know, recovery isn't about getting the cash and the prizes and the great life. It's about helping other people. And I showed up and I was reminded of an AA speaker. You know, somebody said to me, how did it go? And it's like, I don't know. I wasn't there. Like God just showed up and spoke through me. And, you know, now doing these things is truly one of my greatest joys. Being of service in this program is my purpose. You know, it's like the 12-step way of life. It's my destiny. It's who I am, and I am so grateful for it. What does it look like to practice these principles in all my affairs outside of the rooms? How am I working and self-sacrificing for others? You know, small things like smiling at people in public, putting away my shopping cart, keeping my mouth shut about others. I'm not perfect at this, but I have gotten so much better. You know, I really practice faith, like the third step, open-handed. Like I literally turn my hands upside down with my palms up and I surrender outcomes and I surrender situations and I surrender people to God. I'm very visual and yet kinesthetic. And so I physically and visually let go of my way and what I want. I actually just bought this quirky little prayer box at a thrift store, and I am using that, you know, of just like, okay, God, here are these things I'm turning over to you. I practice honesty in all my affairs. I don't lie. And if I'm dishonest, I clean it up. I actually, you know, there was a fellow that I missed her call. This was like a couple of months ago. I missed her call and I was dishonest with her about why. And I had to call and clean it up, get honest, you know, make amends for that. I don't keep secrets. You know, I listen to people, you know, when people talk a lot about themselves or just need, you know, when I don't necessarily feel like a relationship is a two-way street, I listen to people. I offer more compassion and understanding to people who don't act according to my script. And I ask God for help and just letting people be who they are. You know, working and living in this way of life in steps 10, 11, and 12 has really also spilled over into my leadership at work. You know, and my job is getting bigger and bigger. My responsibility, my team is getting larger. And I really get to practice these principles, meaning I don't have to have all the answers. My job is to be of service and to help people shine and succeed and just be in the background. And something that's changed a lot for me in practicing this design for living is like, I don't have to be the best all the time. I don't have to be the most important. And that still comes up for me. But by practicing the 10th step and the 11th step and truly asking God to remove that and like meditation and just connecting, I change in the same way that I cannot tell you how I have not eaten compulsively for over 5 years. I cannot tell you how God has removed that extreme ego and need for validation at work and need for praise at work, but it's being removed slowly. And I have this this prayer here at my desk, actually, that I say at work, which is, God, help me stop seeking comfort when my role requires courage, and let me care more about serving my people than being liked by them. That's tough. You know, that's a tough one because I want you to like me. I really do. You know, and I'll do anything to make sure you like me and that you don't leave me. And, you know, again, as a result of this 10th step and the 11th step, like, that's changing. That's changing because I'm showing up and I'm practicing. So at the end of step 10 on page 85, guess what it says? But we must go further, and that means more action, right? Like, so they will always materialize if we work for them, then we launch into step 10. After step 10, it tells me that I'm only going to get these promises if I keep in fit spiritual condition. And guess what? Now I have to keep going further, taking even more action. And, you know, step 11, as we know, is prayer and meditation. That is one of the sweetest, most favorite parts of my life is my prayer and my meditation practice. And connecting with this God, with this higher power, with love, with spirit of the universe, right? That I can't possibly describe to you, you know, I can't tell you what it is, but what I know is that it has done for me what I couldn't do for myself. One day at a time for over 5 years. And so in the mornings I practice meditation and I pray and I write and I do various things. You know, I can get really woo-woo with it. I mean, I burn incense and I've got my crystals and this and that. I enjoy those things, you know. But I connect with this higher power in the morning and all throughout the day. I've got the phone alarm set, you know, to stop and pause and pray. And you know, this way of living and your connection with the higher power, it's just woven into the fabric of my being. So While the phone alarms are helpful and I need them many times, my connection with a higher power, it's part of what makes me human, right? Like, I am a spiritual being having a human experience. Like, connecting with God is like getting back to what's right and true and real, you know? I'm getting back to the source, to my creator. And I absolutely love step 11. And I'm not going to go, like I said, I'm not going to go through the instructions of it necessarily, but it's one of my favorite practices. And the nightly review is so important for my recovery. Just because I got to catch all those things. I can't keep any secrets. I can't keep anything to myself without sharing it. And the nightly review is a place where I do that. So guess what? So at the end of step 11, on page 88, we get this amazing promise. It works. It really does. And then says, all right, but that is not all. There is action and more action. Like, all right. I mean, and this is why, you know, again, like I wanted to talk about 10, 11, and 12 today, because it's just really emphasizing here. Like, if you think you're done, you're not. There is action and more action. And so it says, you know, again, faith without works is dead, like we just heard about in Bill's story. And then this next chapter, working with others, is entirely devoted to step 12. And look, you know, I didn't come up with this, but I love the concept that the end game of these 12 steps is not, I'm going to come in and I'm going to work the 12 steps and I'm going to, you know, lose my weight. I'm going to get a boyfriend. I am going to buy a nice car. I'm going to get a great job. I'm going to buy a house. And I'm going to ride off into the sunset like a normal person, you know? And by the way, all those things, despite riding into the sunset like a normal person, those things have happened for me, but those are not the end game. The end game of these 12 steps is that I try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all my affairs. It is about other people. Because it also tells me that the root of this thing is selfishness and self-centeredness. So the only way that I stay well is getting out of myself. And so a few passages in the big book that I just love about working with others. All right, in the foreword to the second edition on page XVI into the next page, it says, this seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. So strenuous work, one with another, is vital to permanent recovery. And it's, look, it's really cool to be able to, you know, do special editions or to share our stories or, you know, give a retreat or what have you. But what really, really makes the difference and how I really get recovery and how I really keep my recovery is, you know, grabbing the hand of a sick and suffering compulsive overeater and guiding them, right? Guiding them, helping them out of the hole. That's really what is vital to permanent recovery. The doctor's opinion on page XXV, as part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with still others. And my sponsor said to me when we went through this, this is like signing on the dotted line. The only thing that you owe me, the only thing that you need to give back to this program, right? The only thing, if you escape the hell and the misery of this disease, is to work with others. And it's a part of a rehabilitation plan, right? Like, that's what it says. This to me is like a medical treatment plan, like rehab. So I have to work with other people in order to stay well myself. All right, so let's go to page 89 in the chapter Working with Others. It says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. it works when other activities fail. I mean, that's like, I know we've heard this over and over, right? But it says practical experience. Like, these people have been there, you know, we see the stories, we read them, like, nothing ensures immunity. Nothing ensures that I'm going to stay sober with the food for one more day than intensive work, right? Intensive work. It's not just like, oh, I'll take a call here and there. I'll talk to you when I have some time. And I'm reminding myself of that too. Am I strenuously working with others? Am I intensively working with others? Another one of my favorite lines in the Big Book about sponsorship, or I take it that way, is in Dill's story on page 15. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times I've gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is a design for living that works in rough going. You know, and the joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. And to me, it's so important to point out, like, life is not perfect. We're going to have pressure. We're going to have difficulty. And look, we see above, like, Bill walked through self-pity, resentment. He says he was unwell. Like, he wasn't perfect, right? We're not getting sunshine and rainbows and a walk through the park, like I said, but we are getting true joy. Like, I get joy doing this. And guess what? That comes from working with others for me. You know, the other morning, I'll tell you, I woke up and I was just, it's like, as my partner puts it, I was underwater. Just was underwater. I didn't feel like doing life that day. I felt really down, kind of uncharacteristically. And I had a call set with a sponsee. And don't think that I did not consider canceling that call. But, you know, we got on the phone. We were reading in Bill's story together. And guess what? It saved the day when all other measures failed. Prayer, meditation, writing, trying to get out of it. Work with another compulsive overeater saved the day for me. And that's been my experience over and over again in doing this work with others and helping another compulsive overeater. Some more highlights just from the chapter and working with others, you know, on page 89, it says life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And like I said, I mean, I actually have a purpose now. And I am telling you, the last group that I wanted to be a part of was a group called Overeaters Anonymous. I wasn't interested. Like host of friends, blah, blah, blah. But frequent contact with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Please give me a break. That's ridiculous. You know, I mean, I would sit in my car. I was the person, I would sit in my car at meetings in Houston, Texas for years, watching you all walk in, and I would not go in. I couldn't do it. I was so scared. I hated myself. You know, I was in such misery. I just couldn't come in. And now, like, my life has a true meaning. I get to help other people. Like, there is a fellowship growing up about me. I have a host of friends in this program. You all have become my closest friends. I travel the country to see you. I want to plan vacations around meeting up with you, going to conventions, retreats. Like, nothing brings me greater joy. It is the bright spot of my life. And that is a miracle. You know, I can be uniquely useful to others. It tells me that because of my own experience, I get to be uniquely useful. And before recovery, I absolutely did not feel like I was of much use. You know, I wasn't able to get out of myself. Not because I was a bad person, because I was a really sick person. And I was so consumed with me. And that can still be the case. I mean, most days on my nightly review, when it says, was I thinking of myself most of the time? Yeah, I was. I was thinking of myself most of the time. But guess what helps that? Work with another compulsive overeater, giving service, through work and self-sacrifice for others. So a few other things in this chapter that I just wanted to point out, from my experience in sponsoring and in working with others. I think the first is that on page 90, it talks about, okay, if he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste your time trying to persuade him. If he doesn't want to see you, never force yourself upon him. We don't chase sponsees, but we can be friendly to them. We can love them, but I don't chase them. When I wasn't ready until I was ready, and there was no human on the planet that could have gotten me to the point of absolute desperation and hopelessness that it took for me to be willing. On page 94, says, it's important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you're helping him. And, that comes up a lot, because I'll have sponsees, who just can't get out of the food or who keep picking up, say, I'm so sorry for wasting your time. And I have to remind them, not a single minute of this has been time wasted. Like, you're helping me more than I'm helping you. I have to attempt to pass this on. That's what it says. We try to carry the message. We attempt to, right? But we are human power. We are human power. And then on page 94, if your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you've perhaps made a friend. And my sponsor that I have now, man, we tried to work together so many times, and I couldn't do it. I would just ghost. I wouldn't even say, hey, I'm not going to call you today. I would just peace out. And she was always there when I would come back around, and welcoming me back as a friend. And people would check in on me from time to time, when I would go out or wouldn't really be around. And I do the same thing, A lot of my former sponsees are friends of mine, people who aren't around in the rooms anymore. And just from time to time, I'll check in on them, let them know I care about them, I'm thinking about them. I don't know what's best for other people. I know this works for me, and there's no lurking notion that there's anything else that would work for me. But, I am friends with my sponsees. And then on page 95, it says, tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. And, I am asking myself that. Am I doing that? Am I doing anything to help somebody who wants to get well? Am I really going to any length to help people get well? Or am I doing it when it's convenient? Am I really being inconvenienced by this thing? It was a really an amazing thing. I moved to a smaller town a couple of months ago and decided to go to an in-person meeting. And it's a very small meeting in person, but there was a brand new newcomer there. And she was looking for a sponsor, her first OA meeting ever. And I've been sponsoring her. And this reminds me, I told her that I would go to the grocery store with her. She's here, local, help her shop for groceries, But that's inconvenient. When am I going to find a time when I really want to go to the grocery store with this person? Don't you know I already have to go for myself? But it's like, am I going to do anything to help her get well? Page 97, helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. So again, this is the end game. Helping others. This is it. This is the foundation stone of my recovery. Something else I love from this chapter is on page 98. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. And something that I was asked early on in my abstinence by my sponsor was just like, okay, what is your prayer? When I would bring, like, I want to pick up, I want to eat, or I'm disturbed, I'm upset about this or that, it was just like, what is your prayer? And I to take it to God from the very beginning, you know, and not to develop this like over dependence on another human being. Now, again, a lot of times I access my higher power through other people, but ultimately, like, my dependence is on God. It tells me, you know, on page 99 that my recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon my relationship with God. And, you know, like I said, I've walked through a lot in this recovery, you know, in the last 5 years. I've walked through some amazing, beautiful, joyful moments, and I walked through a lot of pain, as we all have, right? Like, we're all human beings going through life. Experienced a lot of loss, a lot of grief, sadness, uncertainty, you know, the not knowing. And my recovery is dependent upon my relationship with God. So in those moments when I don't want to do it anymore, right? When life just feels unbearable, like, I lean in hard to this program, and I lean in hard to my higher power. And sometimes that looks different than others. I mean, when I had experienced a miscarriage and I was in so much emotional pain that I had no idea existed, I told my sponsor, I'm not praying and meditating, not doing it, at least for tomorrow, I refuse. And she said, okay, I'll do it for you. But it was like, it was such a beautiful thing because I was remaining connected. I didn't just vanish, right? I stayed showing up. And there's something about, you know, this idea of getting honest and saying something I don't want to say, sharing something I don't want to share, connecting with another person. There is a power greater than me in that. So I'm depending on God in that because there is a faith in showing up and taking a trust fall and sharing honestly. And so I tell new sponsees that too, just to relate it also to sponsoring, you know, as a sponsor or a sponsee, right? Like, if I'm not comfortable or if I'm terrified to share, how about I just take a trust fall with my higher power and I share something with one person to see how it goes. Trust in my higher power that I'm going to be okay. And then, you know, as I wrap up, on page 100, it says, you know, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And wow, that was an unexpected burst of emotion, but that has been my experience. You know, that both me and the new man or woman, we are just walking together hand in hand, day by day in this path of spiritual progress. I'm not like some perfect guru that's teaching someone what to do. Nope. No. We're just walking side by side, day by day. I have one day at a time for 5 years. My newest sponsee has one day at a time for about 45 days. And here we are. And we're persisting together. And remarkable things are happening. And then it's so true. I'm placing, you know, I am placing myself in God's hands. And I'm just saying, all right, God, I'm showing up, right? And the third step, right? I offer myself to you. I offer my sponsees to you. I offer my recovery to you. I offer my relationships to you. I offer my job to you to build with these things and to do with these things as you will, and relieve me of the bondage of self. Take away my difficulties with these things so that what? So that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, right? So back to the end game. Again, it's like the end game is that all the glory goes to God, that I am saying all of this, the fact that I can show up, be where I say I'm going to be on a Sunday morning, do something I'm scared of doing, get honest, sharing my truth, having no control over what any of you think of me. Here I am doing it, you know, and I'm turning it over to God. And the truth is that I live in a new and wonderful world, because for today, I'm pretty sure that I'm not going to eat compulsively. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to, you know, show up and be of service and love others and be wildly imperfect. But because I go to bed tonight sober, I'm going to have a chance to wake up tomorrow and with God's help, you know, do better. And I think I will go ahead and pass there. Thanks. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Larry.
Oh, thanks, Lindsay. We appreciate the vulnerability. We emotions matter for sure. And we appreciate the passion and the practical message of hope. And it's a great demonstration of recovery and a terrific addition to the archive. So thank you for that. I want to give you guys the share ID for Lindsay W's presentation this morning, so you have that. I'll give it again later, but that number is 23,569. That's 23569. And I'll ask you to please stick around till the end of the program for Lindsay's contact information. We'll get it at that point. But for now, let's transition to Q&A. Here's a great opportunity to ask a question of Lindsay. What you're going to want to do is press star one to unmute and give me your name, and we'll get you in the queue. So who has a question for Lindsay? Questions only, please. Questions for Lindsay this morning.
Hi, it's Naomi B. with a question.
Hey, Michelle. Naomi, I got you in the queue. Michelle. And I got Michelle. Who else?
Joy and Michelle W.
Joy. I got Naomi, Michelle, Joy.
Karen K.
Was that Karen K? Let me tell you who I got so far before you, so we don't have to repeat. Naomi, Michelle, Joy, Karen K, and then who else?
RVV
in Ohio.
Someone from Ohio. Who was from Ohio first? Who was that from
Kiana.
Ohio?
Kiana.
Kiana. Okay, Kiana. Kiana, I got you. And then prior to that, there was someone that was trying to get their name in as well.
RVV, Vancouver.
Is it Avi? Is it like A-V-I?
A-V-I, yes. Thank you.
Okay. We got Naomi. We got Michelle, Joy, Karen, Avi, Kiani, Kiana. Who else?
Hanayeta from California.
We got you, Hanayeta. And then who was it from California?
Mia B.
Mia? Okay. I got you, Mia. Let's stop right there, and we're going to kind of see where we're at this morning. So we got it in this order. We got Naomi, Michelle, Joy to the world, Karen K, Avi, Kiana, Anayeta, and Mia, if I got that right. So if you're not Naomi from Philly, from that area, would you please mute yourself? Naomi, good morning. Press star one, Naomi. Okay, I'm not hearing you.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Good morning.
Okay, thank you. The show is amazing. I'm sitting here, it's like, oh my gosh, that's my story. But my problem is, I want a sponsor, but I can't find sponsees. I go to two face-to-face meetings. One's a Zoom meeting, and the other is a face-to-face meeting on Saturday mornings, and we really haven't had any new people come in. And I've put my name out there at different places. I can't find sponsees. I am so, it's like you said, you can't, well, I know for myself, I can't keep it unless I give it away. But if I can't find anyone to give it away, I do a ton of service. I always have, and I still do. Where do you find your sponsees?
That is a great question. I think a couple of things come up for me. Now, I do go to some really large meetings where where I will leave my number on Zoom mostly. I've also gotten, as I said, I went to that small in-person meeting and there was a newcomer there looking for a sponsor, which was, totally a God thing. But a couple of other things I've done, when I've needed a new sponsee or had an opening, I always just pray about it. And God, please bring the right person in my path. I'm open. Help me just be open to, whoever comes in my path. So I pray about it. And then also, I have been reminded lately, am I actively seeking out newcomers? Am I calling the newcomers? And if the meetings I'm going to don't have newcomers, then I need to find another meeting to go to where there are newcomers so that I can reach out to those people. And even if I'm not sponsoring them, I believe that intensive work with others can also just be talking to a newcomer and helping them, right? If I don't have a sponsee. So I think that would be my answer to the question. Thanks.
Thanks, Naomi. Okay, next up we have Michelle followed by Joy. Michelle, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm Michelle WC in California. So Lindsay, my question for you is, I'm currently working the steps again, and I'm on step 10. But in the past, after I've worked the steps and...
Michelle, we were able to hear you, and then you dropped off for a second. Okay, we lost Michelle, but we can circle back to you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Yeah, try again. We lost you there for.
Yeah, I think I got muted somehow. My question is. Currently reworking the steps. I'm at step 10. In the past, when I have finished working the steps and people would ask me what step I'm on, I would usually say, I'm living in 10, 11, and 12, or I'm recovered. But that never felt quite right. And I'm just curious, you sort of touched on that in the beginning. If you could elaborate, if people ask you what step you're on, how do you respond to that?
That's a really great question. Like, depending on the minute of the day you ask me, I can tell you what step I'm on. Meaning, like, for me, I feel like I'm just up and down and all around the steps always, as a way of life, if that makes sense. So, right now, I'm on step 12 because I am trying to carry the message on this call. There are a lot of moments of the day that I'm deeply in step one, right? Like, especially at work right now, I'm powerless over the desire to be liked by my team, that kind of thing, right? So that's, a lot of times six and seven. So I think that really is how I answer it, actually. It's kind of a joke, but it really is. Like, depending on the minute of the day, depends on, what step I'm on. So I don't love the vernacular of I've finished the steps. For me, that doesn't work because, again, it really is a way of life for me. And so I'm just always in the steps. So that's, thanks for asking.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. Okay, next up we have Joy followed by Karen. Joy, good morning.
May I be heard?
You can, you bet.
Thank both of you. Thank you, Larry, but thank you so much. Your talk this morning has been a blessing, a real blessing. There was lots of talk, some talk among fellows that we need to rush and measure as we take sponsees through the step because of the benefit to the sponsor. It is my belief that that doesn't work. I spend only 30 minutes a day with my sponsees, talk to them, and I pray. And when I think they've got they understand what I mean by turning the will in your life over. Then I, say goodbye and send them off like birds from the fence. What is your feeling about the length of time it should take to take a sponsee through the steps?
So to be clear, you're asking like how long, like in a matter of like weeks it takes to take someone through the steps, or you're saying how long are the calls?
No. How long? I mean, do you have a measured length of time, or do you measure it by when you believe and pray that they comprehend?
Oh, I see. Yeah, no, I don't have a measured length of time. Every sponsee is a little bit different. I take them through the book and we just see, you know, how it unfolds and how long it takes. I mean, we certainly, you know, aren't going slowly. We try to, you know, we try to move through it, I mean, quickly, but not, you know.
Well, yeah, I take 30 minutes a day with them, but my question is, do you think it takes a couple of weeks, or I think it takes a couple of months or 2 to 3 months. Do you have a measured time?
Yeah, generally. So I do not have a measured time, but generally for me, it is, yes, definitely taking more than 2 weeks. I would say generally, you know, a couple months, maybe 3-4 months, really depending on the person and if they're able to stay sober with the food through working the steps. You know, that's a big part of it too. But I think the biggest way to answer is like, I don't have a measured time. I don't have, you know, this has to be done by this point.
Okay. Thanks so much for that question, Joy. Next up with the question is Karen, followed by Avi. Karen, good morning. Karen, press star one if you would. Okay, maybe we'll circle back. I thought I heard Karen, but let's move on to Avi, and we'll try one more time back with Karen. Avi, do you have a question for Lindsay this morning?
I do. Good morning, everyone. This is Avi, gratefully recovered in Vancouver, British Columbia, currently in LA. Lindsay, thank you so much for that presentation. Funnily enough, I'm actually at a retreat that's called Design for Living right now, so I'm thinking, coincidence? Nope, not at all. So thank you for that. My question is, you had mentioned in your talk that paraphrase poorly, my recovery is dependent on my relationship with God and God only, and that you turned to God. You were brought through this program to always turn to God first, not to another human being. And I do all the disciplines. I have this amazing sponsor. I'm doing all the things, but I have my daily conscious contact. I connect through the day, and I mean, it is a deep, beautiful, and pure connection. But when I'm in times of trouble, my first thought is not God. It is self-will. And then I would go, okay, wait a minute, Avi, wait a minute. Let's bring God in. But it is not God. So my question is, how did that become such an embedded part of your practice that you just turn to God first thing, no matter what? Thank you.
Well, that's a great question. And I want to make very clear that I don't. You know, I don't always turn to God first thing, no matter what. A lot of times, you know, I first am in self-will also, right? How can I fix this? How can I make it better? What do I need to do differently? I don't like how this person's behaving, whatever it might be. So the instruction is, right? The instruction says that we ask God at once to remove them. I'm talking about step 10, for example. But I truly believe and was taught, like a lot of times I access my higher power. I access divine inspiration through connecting with other people. And I really believe that there is a power that is greater than me in that connection, right? When I make an outreach call to somebody and just say, ooh, I am having a hard time and I need some help, that is a power greater than what my own mind can produce. Because what my own mind produces is that I'm going to figure it out, or that I'm just going to sit around and be pissed off or afraid. So, you know, and so that often is my first response, to try to figure it out. But then, you know, ideally, yes, I go to God at once and ask God to remove it. Sometimes I need the help of another human being to help me access my higher power. So I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think that's, you know, that's an important thing. And especially as a newcomer, you know, a lot of times working with new sponsees who, you know, 10 times out of 10 are terrified to make outreach calls, or at least at a minimum feel like they're going to be inconveniencing people. And I say, there's, you know, just when I take an action that is contrary to what I want to do, I believe that there's a power greater than me in that. So that is, I'll pass there. Thanks, Avi.
Yeah, thanks, Avi. I'm going to circle back and just see, maybe I misheard, but I thought there was a Karen. I'll give you an opportunity. If not, we will move on to Kiana. I definitely heard Kiana. Karen? Okay, another voice in my head. That happens. Let's move on to Kiana. Kiana, it's your turn. Good morning.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for your service. Good morning. I'm Kiana. I have a question and a request. My request is that you repeat the prayer for that you say for work, for people at work. And then my question is, you mentioned about how you become friends with your sponsor, and I totally love that and agree. However, I was curious if you ever sponsor a friend, like a friend who is a friend first and then choose to sponsor them. And I ask this question because of fear of losing friendships because of the sponsor relationship. So I would love your insight on that. Thank you.
Thank you for that. So I will. I'll repeat the prayer. And then you can also call me and I'd be happy to send it to you. But it's, God, help me stop seeking comfort when my role requires courage. Let me care more about serving my people than being liked by them. And then in terms of sponsoring a friend, you know, I don't think I have had that experience of having, you know, an existing, like, close friend in the program that I have sponsored. You know, I've had fellows that I talk to regularly who maybe have relapsed and then they asked me to sponsor them. So I do have that experience, but not someone that I would consider a good friend. So, I mean, I know there are people that do have that experience. I am not one of them, but what comes up for me again, just with all sponsorship relationships, is that I always take it to prayer. And that would probably be the only suggestion that I have from my experience. Thanks.
Thanks, Kiana. Okay, next up we have Hanayeta, followed by, I believe it was Mia or maybe Maya. I might be mispronouncing that. Hanayeta, good morning to you. Star one, Hanayeta.
Sorry about that. Hi, this is Hanayeta, and I'm from Texas. Lindsay, my neighbor. I wrote down the question. Where did I put it? I'm sorry. Can you go to the next person, and then I'll go next?
Sure. Yeah, no worries at all. Yeah, we'll come back to you, Hanayeta. Okay, potato or patata, Mia or Maya, I can't remember. Help me out. Good morning to you. I hope I didn't scare you away.
Good morning. Can you hear me now?
I can. Okay. Nice to hear
Lovely.
You.
Lovely. This is Mia B. in California, and thank you for your service, Larry. Thank you, Lindsay, for your inspirational share. My question is, how long do you take each in the morning and each in the evening for your quiet time with God, and what are your practices for each of these times? Example, so much time meditating, writing, etc. Thank you.
Thank you. So it's not always exactly the same, but I can tell you kind of the ideal and, you know, kind of average that I strive for, I guess. So I wake up pretty early in the mornings. I wake up at generally 4:50 in the morning, and I get my coffee first. And then I have a little meditation spot in my room that I sit in, and I'll do either a silent meditation, sometimes a guided meditation. There are certain meditation teachers that I really enjoy. Lately, I've been enjoying doing silent meditations. And generally, the meditation is anywhere between 5 minutes and 20 minutes. I think the sweet spot is just a 15-minute meditation where I get quiet. And then I will generally do writing. I love journaling. So I actually, pen to paper and I write. And a lot of times in the morning, I just start, "Good morning, God. Thank you for your love. I love you." I mean, just really kind of, just connecting with God. And then I'll a lot of times do a gratitude list in the morning and just kind of free flow writing. Sometimes, it's things that come up from the nightly review or the day before, some specific resentments or fears that I need to flesh out a little bit. And then another practice I really love is that I will look at my nightly review from the prior day, and I will actually pray through that. And I will pray for God to remove the resentments, and I will pray for God to remove the certain defects that came up, the certain selfishness, dishonesties, fears that I inventoried. And then a lot of times I'll pray for God to increase their opposites. So that's a practice that I really enjoy doing in the mornings. I also have daily readers and spiritual books that I read, not as consistently, not every single day, but I try to do them more often than not. And then, as I said, throughout the day, I'm pausing and I'm praying and just connecting with my higher power. And then at night, so ideally, I do my nightly reviews sort of before I technically retire, if you will. I heard someone say once, before he turns on like the baseball game or sits on the couch to watch TV or sort of, settles in for the final activity of the night. He'll do his nightly review. So that's the ideal practice for me, that I do that so that I have the nightly review fully done, connecting with my higher power in that way. I do a pretty exhaustive nightly review. They're pretty lengthy. And then if I don't do it at night, then I do it the next morning, but that's not ideal, but sometimes it does happen. So yeah, I think that's my answer for the morning and the night practices. Thanks.
Thanks, Mia. Okay, let's circle back to Hanayeta. Hanayeta, you ready with the question?
Yes. Thank you so much. Good morning. And good morning to both of you. Thank you so much for your service. I love it. One day I'll be able to do service on this. You quoted from the big book, "Real Tolerance of Others, ... The question is, what about the people or person that triggers all of your stuff? I mean, I'm looking at, how do you get through that? Is there a special thing for these special people that just totally drive you nuts? That's my question.
That's a great question. The good news is that we have instructions. The good news is, and that's something that I didn't mention that I really love about sponsoring and that I really love about this 12-step way of life, is that I don't have to come up with anything new. As a sponsor, I don't have to come up with the latest and greatest solution to something. It is clear.
Oh, crap.
Lindsay, I think we press star 1 to try to unmute yourself again, if you could. We might have muted you.
Oh, I did get muted. Yep, I did get
there we
muted.
Go. Okay, you're back.
There we are. Okay, so I don't know where I was, but or what you heard last, but either way, I was I was talking about just how we don't have to reinvent the wheel as sponsors, and I really love that, and that we have these clear directions. So we've got prayers. We've got prayers that we can say for these people. And I have to constantly be reminded, like, did you pray about this? Did you take this to God? Where is God in this? Because I forget, you know, and it's funny because when I remind my sponsees, they're like, oh my gosh, I forgot. And I said, well, the reason I'm thinking to remind you is because I also have to get reminded of this, right? Like I also have to get reminded by my sponsor and by my fellows, like, did I pray about this? What is my higher power? How am I inviting God into this? So we've got the sick man's prayer on page 67. You know, we ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. How can I be helpful? Save me from being angry. Thy will be done. And sometimes I'll even say, I don't feel this way and I don't mean this, but I'm going to do it anyway, right? Because it's like I am powerless over that. And so I just have to trust God that God can remove these resentments just like God removed my, you know, relentless desire to overeat. And then we also have the resentment prayer in the back of the book where it says to say this prayer every day for 2 weeks or 4 weeks or 6 months. God, please give this person everything I want for myself. And then I list all the things that I would want for myself and pray that for that person. And eventually the volume on the resentment starts to go down. But I think I also have to adjust my expectations that it's not necessarily going to go from like a 10 in volume to a 0 in volume. Even if it goes down to like a 7.5, that's progress. You know, that is growth. So, thanks for that question.
Thanks, Hanayeta. Well, we have time
Thank
for
you,
perhaps...
easily I forget.
Pete Bay, yeah. Gotcha, Pete. Thanks. We got time for perhaps another person in addition to Pete. Who else has a question? Star one? Okay, we can see where we're
hi.
At.
Hi,
who's that?
Christine, I have a question.
Okay, Christine, you'll come in after Pete. So let's see where we're at after that. Brother Pete, good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for your service. And Lindsay, thanks for that. That was really good. So you used the term food sober, and I'm unfamiliar with that. Could you please explain specifically what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, what that means is that, and I am not an alcoholic, right? I am not in another program. But what it means for me is to get clarity on what for me is like alcohol to an alcoholic. So what food items, what food ingredients to me are like alcohol in that once I ingest them, they produce the phenomenon of craving for me. So when I say I'm sober with the food, that's essentially what I mean, is that I am not ingesting any of my alcoholic foods or food ingredients. So essentially, I would say it's synonymous for me with abstinence. So I've been abstinent from my alcoholic foods, ingredients, behaviors for 5 years and 2 months. I've been sober with the food for that same amount of time. So I hope that answers the question.
It does. Thank you for the clarity.
Yep, you're welcome.
Oh, you bet. Thanks, Pete. Okay, perhaps our final question. We'll see if we have more time, but let's move on to Christine. Christine, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Lindsay, thank you so much for your service. Actually, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you about, is you talked a lot about service. And I'm just wondering about the use of your sponsor. You did mention you still have a sponsor, but how much you use your sponsor. And I've heard some people say that they don't even have a sponsor anymore, that they really just focus on service. But can you talk a little bit about how much you use your sponsor?
That is a very good question. So there have been times in my recovery where I have, you know, I realized I'm talking to my sponsees all the time. I am giving all the service. I'm talking to newcomers. I'm, you know, doing a retreat or, you know, helping with a workshop. But, you know, who am I getting direction from? Who am I connecting to talk about what's going on with me and where I need help? And again, like I said, I mean, I often connect to my higher power when I connect with others. So it is very important for me to have a sponsor who has a sponsor. That is incredibly important. And then also to have the sponsees, right? So it goes both ways. In terms of my sponsor, so I do send her my nightly review on a daily basis. You know, the instructions in the big book do not say that we share our nightly review with anybody. For me, it's just a way to expose my inner thought life, my actions, you know, just have someone else knowing what's going on with me. You know, I don't have any secrets. So I want to make sure that at least another human being on this planet knows what's going on. Otherwise, I can get wonky. I can start to get dishonest, right? God, ourselves, and another human being. That's how I see it. So I send her my nightly review on a daily basis. And then we typically talk at least once a week. So I have, you know, I actually found myself going a week or two without talking to my sponsor. And I thought, you know, I just like to have that connection each week where I'm talking to someone who knows me, someone who's going to bring me back to the truth, someone who, you know, has heard my inventory and is intimately familiar with my life, my challenges, my defects, et cetera. So we talk at least once a week, and then we see each other on at least one meeting. We go to the same home meeting, so we see each other there. So we're in, you know, we're in very regular communication, and she's always available to talk when I need to talk to her. In terms of how I sponsor recovered sponsees, you know, we typically still will have a scheduled call. So, you know, maybe a couple of calls a week, 30 minutes each, one call a week. I have one that we just, you know, we typically will read, you know, still read the book together once a week. So I stay very connected both to my sponsor and my recovered sponsees.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Christine. And thank you to everyone. That's a wrap. We appreciate everyone being here. Those that ask questions, those are just listening and participating in that fashion. We appreciate you. Most especially, Lindsay, I don't know, you didn't sound nervous to me. It was great. We appreciate you. Thank you so much. And I'm going to give the share ID again now for Lindsay's presentation. If you need how to spell Lindsay in this case, you know, names are spelled different ways, but Lindsey, that's Lindsay W from Texas. You could probably find her on the list, I'm assuming, if you're looking for her, but we'll get her contact information in just a moment here. The share ID number again for the presentation is 23,569. That's 23569. So we're now going to close with a reading from the big book. I don't know. I'll go. Let's see. How about page 164? Why don't we go with that? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.